exhilarating feeling of being here. It's a blessed feeling. And I can get emotional real quick, so I have to control myself. I want to tell you, this would be a risky one, how much I miss Adam. I got to say it. Been coming up here for quite a while. Been years. And I always knew that it was a loving environment. And therefore, I would take risks. I gave more first-time talks here than I gave anywhere else in the world. I'd try it out here and see how it would fly. And I kind of found out later that it wasn't that, I don't want to say honest, but it wasn't that unbiased opinion or audience. It wasn't that good a test because they kind of liked me and I liked them, you know? So, you know, subsequently, as I gave the same talk across, I would get into trouble, but not into trouble here. Anyway, so we're going to do it again. This is a first timer, and it's something that's been on my heart and mind for a while. So I was compelled. I was compelled to do it. The life of prayer is very important to the Christian. We know how much Jesus prayed, and we know that everybody we read about in the scriptures, they prayed. Some of them prayed day and night. So, we want to pray appropriately. Jesus gave us some warnings. He said, don't pray too long. Don't pray on the street corners. He said, don't pray like the Pharisees. Pray more like the publicans. So, we look for advice. We would like to be more effective. We'd like to pray for the right things. And so I'll tell you some background here about this subject, this presentation. I've read the book of Colossians 40 or 50 years. And it's a great book. It's a short book. I like it for all those reasons. I like short things. I like it's four chapters. And, you know, the first two chapters are about God's plan, and especially about the fact that there's reconciliation for everyone. And then the last two chapters, he goes into the traditional Paul style of do list. You got to do this. Don't get angry. You got to do this. You got to pray. You've got to sing songs. You got to take care of other people. You have to put on a new garment. You have to take off the old garment. Paul lists those in chapters 3 and 4. But in all those years, I missed something. And I can't blame myself, right? I mean, we never want to do that. But what I give credit to for finding this little gem is another translation. Sometimes, and I think this is a valid point, when we look at it in another translation, it clicks. Might not work for you, but in this case, it worked for me. And I came across this little section in the beginning of the book of Colossians, and it was absolutely terrific. I actually got excited. Now, did I say which translation it was? Phillips. It was J.B. Phillips. I like Phillips a lot. One of my two favorites. I like Barclay Phillips the best. For me. And there's a phrase in there which I'll highlight that I thought, this is it. This is the best phrase I ever heard. So, I already said this, not completely. The things that I remember from my years-long glancing at Colossians and quoting random scriptures out of it was, to be honest, I remember number two first. And that was the warning about intellectualism. And I would say, what does that mean? That means getting a little bit too fancy, getting a little bit too much emphasis on the numbers and multiplying numbers and dividing them and then finding that this is this. And then if you add the digits together, oh, it equals this. That's what Paul says. Don't do it. But what's more important was in the first chapter in the 20th verse, it says that Jehovah wanted to have everything come into him through his son. He doesn't say almost everybody. He doesn't say everybody except for the ones who won't listen to you. I'm telling your friends, he says everybody, and he says everything. And you know what? I'm going to take that. I know we can rationalize that there has to be judgment and righteousness. Oh, we can do all that. I'm going to take this Colossians for what it says. And then chapters 3 and 4, the to-do list. But there was this little section in chapter 1. And what it is it's Paul's prayer. Now, I'm tempted to not tell you the verses because I don't want you with your nose in your King James Bible right now. I want you to listen to the way Phillips says it. Because I read the King James translation for 60 years and plus, and I didn't get it. And I read Phillips for the probably 10th time, and I got it. Now, Barclay's this four verses is part of Paul's greetings. And he's going to say, I pray for you every day. There's a big lesson in that. He'd never even met these brethren. Never met them. Prays for them every day. Phillips, same four verses, does it also in five sentences, but a little bit different. He uses two sentences on one verse. Barclay uses two sentences on another verse. Anyway, I'm saying five sentences. Now, it seems that it's important in this approach that we remember the verses were in addition to the Bible. Whether it's verse number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 28, or 64, it was an addition in the 1500s by a Catholic monk. The chapters were an addition. Paul didn't write this and say, okay, now for verse 5, I'm going to say, and now verse 6, he didn't do that. He wrote a letter. So I'm all for looking at these like they're, guess what? Letters. Well, at the beginning of the letter, there's a greeting. And then Paul, it kind of fits with the greeting. He says, I pray for you every day. This is the most amazing sentence of all. I'm going to talk about more what he says, but as far as I'm concerned, I could leave it right here. He said, I pray for you that you could see everything from God's point of view. You cannot beat that. To see everything from God's point of view, the chaos, the murders, the deaths, the corruption, the lies, just go on and on and on. But if you could see it from God's point of view, what more could we ask for? It's the first thing Paul says that he's going to pray for. Now he says, as I do that from God's point of view, and that's what Philip says. Okay? He says, and it will, part of it will be two things: spiritual insight and understanding. The details later. So David, don't leave right away. Yeah, we're going to get into details. I love that approach. Okay, then the second thing he says, big point, because we've got two subpoints under number one. But number two is that your knowledge of God will grow. All right, we'll get into that. But that's the overview of these five verses, these five sentences, four verses. See everything from God's point of view, with spiritual insight, with understanding, and that your knowledge of God would grow. Now he says some other things that he prays for every day, okay? I don't think they're quite as important as the others, and I'm going to make a conclusion at the end. Actually, I'll tell you what the conclusion is. My suspicion is if we do the first four, the other four come automatically, but they come a little bit more naturally. And if we focus on the first ones, 1, 2, 3, 4, which are all in number 1 and 2, that's it. That's the essence of it. And so as he goes on, he says, on number 3 here, he says, I pray that your outward life is an example to everybody. We would hope that, right? This is the prayer. And then he says that number 4 here on this part, that you bear Christian fruitage. Makes sense. That means we develop these things, these items that we're going to list, that Brother Rick is going to talk about tomorrow. And that, you know, one at a time, the anger control, the feeling for others. That's what he means by fruitage. Then he says, I pray that you, number 5, I pray that you have strength to endure your trials, not just endure them. You see what he says? Endure them with joy. Okay, and then finally, the last thing he says, and I pray that you would always thank God for all these things. In a nutshell, we just got a look into how Paul prayed. His books are filled. Every book just about says, pray. Pray for the brethren. Pray for this. Pray for that. But this is, I think, the first time he tells us what he really prays about. And I think this is important because I need to improve my prayers. I hear other prayers that I think could use improvement. You know, sometimes I wonder when prayers are made and they repeat the whole divine plan of the ages. I don't know if God needs to hear the whole plan of the ages all over again. I think he knows the plan. We can thank him for the plan, but you know, that kind of thing. Okay. That's the outline of the prayer. Maybe it's like 8 items there. And I said that they put it into sentences. Now, let's go into details. So there's 3 very interesting words in those verses, the first verses, where he talks about seeing it from God's viewpoint, the spiritual insight, understanding, knowledge. So those three that I have in red, insight, understanding, and knowledge, are really interesting Greek words. I think we can learn from them because they're all so similar that we want to see what the nuances are. Okay? So insight is the Greek word, as the old line goes, counts 4, 6, 7, 8. And the Greek word is sophia. And this is the, we're kind of familiar with this because this is the second half of philosophy. So philosophy is half this word. And philo, we know, is part of the, one of the descriptions in Greek of love. So philosophy means love of insight, or love, maybe more commonly translated, wisdom. But we can do better than wisdom. So let's look at that sophia first. Like I said, it's generally translated wisdom. And Paul is praying then that they receive wisdom. And Jesus used this word. This word is frequently used in the And some of the times, a sweet one is in the second chapter of Luke, where they were talking about the little 12-year-old boy, Jesus. Before that, they said in Luke 2, the child grew strong in spirit, filled with sophia. Jesus, as a little boy, filled with sophia. And later in that second chapter, Jesus increased in sophia and stature, in the favor with God and men. So sophia is part of Jesus. And then finally, I misspoke myself about Jesus at 12. In Luke 11, Jesus speaks of the sophia of Solomon, and in Luke 11, it also speaks of the sophia of God, of Jehovah. So Jehovah also has sophia. We have been promised sophia, and Paul is praying that the Colossians would receive from Jehovah sophia. So, as I said, the root word is philosophy, sophi, and we see that a lot in our academic labeling of a PhD, right? That means doctor of philosophy, doctor of studying and loving wisdom. It could be engineering, it can be nutrition, it can be languages, it can be geography. It can be anything. You can get a PhD, but PhD, lover of wisdom. Now, let me say immediately that don't take that flavor and put it on this word of sophia. This sophia does not have this kind of highfalutin PhD level meaning. The scholars tell us that if anything, this word means street smarts. Okay? I use that almost to jar you, because I want you to remember it. And that it's not an arrogant wisdom, it's spiritual street smarts. Remember in Colossians, he's also warning about intellectualism and all that kind of high stuff. That has no place. So Paul is saying here, I want you guys to have a PhD, but it's in spiritual insight. And he's praying for that. It's got to be something useful. Now the second word is sunesis. Sunesis. And this is not near common as sophia. And as a matter of fact, this is only used 7 times in the New Testament. Understanding is a very good translation of it. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's narrower than understanding, generally. It's a very narrow understanding and the ability to distinguish between small details, especially borders and boundaries. This kind of understanding, you know how far to go. You know not to cross this line. That's what this kind of understanding is. Discriminating, in a good sense, is a good translation. When I think of discrimination, the first thing that comes to my mind is vanilla ice cream. If you have the ability to distinguish between vanilla ice cream and French vanilla ice cream, they have sunesis. Okay, so I've given you two unforgettable. Can you imagine that he said that? Where did he say that? Oh, up in Prince Albert, of course. So we've got street smarts, Sophia, and we've got the ability to distinguish between vanilla ice cream and French vanilla ice cream. That should mean something in Canada, French vanilla. Okay. Discriminating in a good sense, if you have that discrimination of taste, that's a good thing. That's what this kind of understanding is. So these first two words have the idea of brain, of thinking. And the third word is also, and it's something that we hear much more frequently, and it's the epignosis. Gnosis meaning thinking, and epi is kind of on top of thinking. So the prayer is to increase the knowledge of God. He's not saying that you get smarter across the board and that you know everything that's on Google and you know everything that's on CNN and Fox News. You got it all because you're so knowledgeable. No. There's a difference between that kind of knowledge and knowledge of God. Does that make sense? I don't have to tell you what the knowledge of God is, do I? You have to study, I would say, what are his values? What are God's values? What is important to him? What kind of decisions did God make? That's increasing your knowledge, epignosis. So the first thing that Paul asks for is spiritual insight and understanding. And then it's a few sentences later that he comes to the knowledge. Okay. Just as an aside, for knowledge, I frequently like the synonym data. Data. You know, it's like, when did such and such start? I'll give you a year. When did World War I start? 1914. That's data. There's nothing to do with wisdom. There's nothing to do with distinctions. That's just flat out data. That's why the apostle says in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 8, guess what? Data is going to fade away. All those kinds of things that we learn, that's data, apostle promises us they'll be gone. We're praying for knowledge of God. That's a huge distinction. Well, let's pause here for just a second. So what does it mean that you're praying for wisdom, insight, understanding? What kind of miracle are you expecting? Are you expecting some kind of flash of light? Like the Apostle Paul going to Damascus, you expect something like that? Is that when you pray, is that what you think is going to happen? No, I don't think so. What you're praying for, I think, is an opportunity to develop these things. That's all we want, is an opportunity. Let's start with knowledge, because that's the easiest. The most important source are the scriptures. Another source, I think we could learn about God in nature. I think there's scriptural basis of that when he talks about that the Gentiles didn't understand God, but they understood it kind of by nature. So it was both their internal nature and what they saw in nature. And most importantly, is listening to his Holy Spirit. I think we miss most of what the Holy Spirit says to us, personally. I think it's talking to us all the time. It's giving us hints. It's giving us inputs. And I think a lot of it goes right over our heads. I don't think we're nearly attuned enough to listening for God's Spirit. Now, the only other way you can get data and knowledge is study, reading. There's no easy way. I mean, maybe it's on a tape or something you're listening to, but you know what I mean. It's by work? It's by working. You're going to have to read things. You're going to have to listen. You're going to have to watch. You're going to have to somehow use one of your senses. You got to get input into the brain. What we call the academic processes. But do you remember the root word of the word study? How many of you took Latin? How many of you had to take Latin in high school? Okay, there's half a dozen of us. And one of the shocking things we learned is the root word of the word study. And it was studeo. And do you guess what studeo means? Open a book? No. Watch a movie? No. Listen to TV? No. Search on Google? No. Studeo means be eager. Studeo. I am eager. Are you a student? Are you eager? That's what this is about. If you want knowledge, studeo. Okay. Now what about, let's go to another word. Let's go to Sophia. And this is insight or wisdom. My suggestion, guess, is that to grow in that, it takes experience. It takes time. I don't think there's any way a newborn child has wisdom or insight. That's my proof in that you got to get old. Now, that doesn't leave me much of an excuse. I should be, at my age, I should be so full of wisdom and insight that I can't stand it anymore. But anyway, it's a process, right? We learn. We can help the process by getting rid of things. The very well point taken the preceding hour that there's things to think about and there's things not to think about. And there's that middle road. I like that. Acknowledge them. Nod your head and move on to the better things. That's super. So you can help the process of getting things in, understanding, by eliminating other kinds of barriers and debris. The third word was understanding, and it kind of means the fine line of understanding. And again, I think it's work. Understanding, I was trying to think of an analogy and all I could think of was a language. You know, if I want to understand French better, I just gotta either work on it or go somewhere where they speak French. You're not gonna get it any other way except some work. So a lot of these things, my point is, we can't just say these in our prayers and then expect some sort of miracle to take place. You got to say these and then say, look, and then look for opportunities. So what comes next? Well, we're back. I think I moved too quickly. So now remember the next four on the list. They were rather behavioral. It had to do with what you look like when you're out in public. Do you look like a Christian? You know, not like the Pharisees, please. No, we know better than that. But is your behavior, are your words, right? Are your attitude and your helpfulness, are all those things Christ-like? And all we want is the opportunity to do those things. But the same thing is true. There was bearing fruit, having strength. I think they come pretty sequentially after the first ones. You pray for the first ones. You're earnest about that. I think I keep wanting to say automatic, and that's a little bit too strong or doesn't show enough work, but I think it flows naturally. And when we start to see those things that the apostle lists next that he prays for, then we know the first ones are working. All right. I think that means your brain is working on the wisdom, the understanding, the discernment. That's okay. If the others are evident in your life, then you've got the package together. And it's a package. And not only is it a package of prayer, but it's also a package. Take it back to the whole letter to the Colossians. Don't extract it and leave it extracted. Pull it out, look at it, detail it, put it back in. The whole story. Recognition of everything. Forget about the intellectualism. Look at chapters 3 and 4 and the to-do list of Christian behavior. So put it all together. It's a connection. And it's so sweet how Paul starts this letter by telling them how much he prays for them. And I have added these items to my prayers. Okay? I think I've improved my prayers by adding these words. And I want you to know that I have also added the words, these words, wisdom, Sophia, understanding, soon, asis. I've added them in my prayers for you.